five, four, three, two.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud. He's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there, there goes the Spider-Man. In the chill of night, at the scene of a crime, like a streak of light, he arrives just in time. Spider-Man, Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Wealth and fame, he's ignored. Action is his reward to him. Life is a great big bang. Wherever there's a hang, you'll find a Spider-Man.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back in to the Radcast. First and foremost, off the top here, things sound a little different. Hopefully not too different, yeah. So I can do some little editing finesse and finagling in the editing process. If you sound a little different, the way that we usually record these with remote guests is we'll
acting
do
acting a little wonky.
Yeah, we'll do it the way that we usually do it. We won't bore you with the details, but it's acting a little wonky. We haven't done it in a while because we've been fortunate enough to have guests in the studio
in person,
thus is not Justine was picking it up. thus is not the case.
Are you
for
okay?
Right now. Yes, I'm fine. thus is not the case for right now. So again, hopefully it's cleaned up a little bit when you listen to it. But we are recording this episode a little differently. But hey, it seems like them's are the breaks for our 200th podcast episode.
Yes. Between three podcasts, this is the 200th episode we've done.
Yes.
And the two guests we have are a very large part of that.
Yes, a very, very big part of that. We will get to them here in just a moment. But like we had been talking about over the course of the past couple episodes, and you've probably seen on the title of the episode, we are talking a huge subject. Mm-hmm. For us and our development and our nostalgia. And I almost say it's not hyperbole to be saying that, and we'll kind of get into some of the reasons as to why as we go on with the episode. But we're talking about the 2002 blockbuster release of Sam Raimi's Spider-Man.
Yes.
Our very first live action.
Whip!
Yeah, baby.
Whip!
It sounds like Spider-Man's on the other end of this phone.
Fizz.
yes. I forgot where I was going with that.
Yeah.
Damn it, Jeff.
Oops.
Oops.
I know. It was the very first live action, not the first live action Spider-Man adaptation, but the one that it almost seems like a movie that got out of development hell that made it to theaters and sort of took the source material seriously, or at least treated it with the esteem that it deserved.
In a way, definitely. Yes. And we'll get into whether or not our guests agree or disagree, but we'll talk about it here.
Because my thoughts have changed about the movie over the years.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But we're talking the Sam Raimi Spider-Man. We'll get into that here in just a moment for the 200th episode. Podcast episode that Matt and I have been a part of.
Yes.
A lot of those episodes wouldn't have been possible without two of our esteemed guests here today.
Yes.
Like Matt said, over the course of three podcasts, we have accumulated 200 episodes. But if you've been with us this whole time, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We had a podcast called The Proper Gentleman Podcast that we did so lovingly over the course of about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't have been possible without two of the founders, two of the co-producers who trudged along with us, and they are coming in through Skype. We are so happy to have them. Ladies and gentlemen, first, coming in from Iowa, he appeared several times on this show, a few times on Sucktastic Cinema, and of course, he is one of the titular Popper Gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, returning to the show, Jake Vielewald.
Jake Vielewald, baby.
Hello. Hello, everybody. Glad to be here. Very glad to be here.
The audience isn't going to see this, but Jake, your shirt makes you look like you're an off-duty firefighter, or at least whenever firefighters are chilling out in the warehouse or the firehouse, waiting for a fire to happen, you're just sitting there playing foosball.
It's actually a shirt for a brewery, so it's a little bit of a different job. Putting out fires in a different way, I suppose.
I guess so.
Don't fight fires in a
putting
different
out sense. Emotional fires.
Yes,
exactly.
In many
more
ways.
More like suppressing them until yeah, you have to deal
exactly.
with them later.
Smothering them. Yeah.
With alcohol.
Yes, exactly. And that other voice coming into us from Decatur, Illinois, he is a several-time guest on the Radcast. He was on Sucktastic Cinema numerous times, and again, another one of the gents. Mr. Jeff Wright
Jeffrey
is back
Wright.
With us.
Yeah, baby, I'm back. I'm back. I'm back again.
Yeah, baby.
Jeff is back, baby.
Yes. A voice that is missing that unfortunately cannot be with us, who very much... regretfully so. He wishes he could, but he has family in town, and that is, of course, more important. One of the other gents and a multiple-time guest on the Radcast, Zach Matthews, cannot be with us.
Yeah.
I say we revoke his gentleman status.
I don't
not
agree.
Here,
who? Uh-oh.
Here comes.
He can't defend himself. Ha-ha.
Someone's got to rock the who. Zach, if you don't know, Zach's famous line is mm-hmm. who? So you'll bring up like, oh, our friend Phil, and he'll be like, who?
Yeah.
Or like, oh, you know, we're talking about Chris Pratt.
This
he'll be
friend
like,
or that
who?
Who?
Yeah. Yeah. He pretends to not know, but that boy knows a lot. And
yeah.
it gets and it's just it grates on me sometimes.
Yeah. And also one of our rules with PGP was if they're not there to defend themselves, they are free game.
Exactly.
which is very friendly.
Yes.
If I do say so myself.
Very proper. Very
yes.
proper of these gentlemen.
No. Yeah. No, it was not friendly. You guys misrepresented me on my Spider-Mans.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah, that's right.
I don't know. That seems a little annoying considering that I'm here to talk about it now. And I don't know. I still don't know. Still got the anger welling up inside me.
All I'll say is that Zach doesn't know comedy.
This is very true.
I know comedy.
Yes.
Jake knows comedy.
Thank you.
Matt and Steven, they know comedy. But Zach,
nah.
He doesn't know comedy.
The only one who doesn't.
He likes to think he does. And he'll tell you too. But I assure you, he does not. Jake, I'm glad to give you a platform to be redeemed, to represent yourself correctly.
After the way that I was mistreated.
Yeah. So it's
okay. I
wouldn't have said it otherwise. So don't be surprised if in the middle of this episode, Jake hijacks it and starts venting his feelings about how he was treated 3 years ago.
Exactly.
I still remember, like, when we did that episode, I came in to your guys' apartment. I just walked in with straight face, pretty angry. And I remember, Matt, you looked at me and very genuinely asked, dude, is everything okay?
Are you all right?
It ended up, you played it straight the whole time, and it ended up being a very funny bit.
Yes.
For those of you that don't know what our inside references are, go back and listen to Proper Gentleman Podcast. And also, we did an episode where we rated all the Spider-Men, and Jake wasn't there for that one, and we did not help his case with some of the Spider-Men he didn't
yes.
like. But the next week, he got back at us and voiced his actual opinion.
Mm-hmm. But it didn't matter anymore because we weren't talking about it anymore.
Yeah.
Everyone forgot.
however, I don't know if you listen to that episode and you listen to this one, our opinions might change. Who knows? But let's get into it. Are you guys ready to talk about Spider-Man?
Yes.
I'm always talking about Spider-Man.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like you're ready to talk about anything.
Very spoopy.
Yeah, very spoopy Spider-Man.
So this is the Radcast rental, which we haven't had in a few months here because
yes.
we're building up to make our next Radcast rental
mm-hmm.
this 200th episode, our 200th podcast episode. So Spider-Man was released May 3rd, 2002, directed by Sam Raimi, starring Tobey Maguire as Peter Parker, or Spider-Man, Willem Dafoe as Norman Osborn, the Green Goblin, Kirsten Dunst as Mary Jane Watson, James Franco as Harry Osborn, Rosemary Harris as Aunt May, J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson, and Cliff Robertson as Uncle Ben, with Bill Nunn as Robbie Robertson, Elizabeth Banks as Betty Brant, a young Joe Manganiello as Flash Thompson, and Macho Man Randy Savage
yes.
as Bonesaw McGraw. Box office of $825
million
on a $139 million budget. So needless to say, that's a lot. That's quite a bit of cheddar. and for those of you that are familiar with us and what we like to do, Jake and Jeff, you remember on Sucktastic, we had a segment called What Was on the VHS. So we're going to carry that over to here.
Yes.
Jake, you had the VHS to this movie, so you might
you might remember some of these previews and you may not. Oh, I don't know.
God, no, I don't.
Fair enough.
Really?
You don't? Jeff, did you have this on DVD or VHS?
I had DVD because I was rich.
Yeah. I remember
just kidding. We weren't rich. I had a PlayStation 2 though.
Yeah. So. I remember
the DVD player, baby.
After seeing this in theaters, as soon as we left the theater, I was counting down the days until it was on VHS.
Yeah.
And it was released and I was expecting a VHS. And our dad came home from work one day with the DVD because our mom asked him to buy it. And I remember being kind of disappointed because I was like, what's this? This won't play.
I can't watch this in my room.
I don't have a player that plays this because I think we just had regular VHS at the time.
Just put it in the CD player. It'll work.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. That's usually how it goes.
Yeah. Put it in your PlayStation.
Yeah. So
I think it's broken.
Jake, for you out of the four of us who did own it on VHS, let me refresh your memory on what was on the VHS. So now in theaters, I Spy with Owen Wilson and Eddie Murphy, which was a remake of a 60s television show.
Oh, yeah.
Coming soon to home video, Triple X with Vin Diesel. So
Spider-Man Triple X.
Yep.
I forgot that there was a franchise called Triple X.
What? Yep. Can you call it a franchise? Was there more than one?
There was two. There was one with there was three.
There's like three.
There's three.
One's true.
One with Ice
Cube. They remade one. And or they made a new one.
They made two with Vin Diesel, and then I forget who they replaced
Ice
them
Cube.
With. But
Ice
were
Cube.
Wanting it to like be a new like James Bond
it was,
type thing.
It
I
was
think.
Vin Diesel in the first.
I thought
one.
They made one like 2 or 3 years ago, and it had Vin Diesel.
Well,
on.
There was.
I'll Google
there,
it.
Well,
sorry, I'm hijacking this podcast. We need to talk about the Triple X movies.
So it was Vin Diesel, Ice Cube, and Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah, Ice Cube was Triple X Part 2, State of the Union, I think it was called, and then the Return of Xander Kane was Triple X 3. I've never seen any of these movies, but I remember
a ridiculous memory.
I remember reading.
You're defending them very well.
Yeah, well,
I'm just naming them. I'd hardly call it a defense. It's just like, okay, not worse. Yeah. Bring back Vin Diesel. It's like, okay, no, that these movies just suck.
Also coming to video, Men in Black 2, Stuart Little 2, now available on home video, Mr. Deeds, Stan Lee's Mutants. Mm. Mr. Deeds is very good.
Yeah, I like that movie.
Stan Lee's Mutants, Monsters, and Marvels, and an ad for Singular Wireless with Spider-Man swinging all over a map. An ad for some Spider-Man series coming in May. It looked like an interactive comic book. And an ad for the Spider-Man soundtrack, which I am incredibly familiar with.
Yes. Oh yeah. Well, I listen to that all of the time.
I don't know if it came with certain ones, but it had the 3D insert on the inside. Yeah, I think it came with all. I think it came with every copy.
Yeah,
But it advertised it had the 3D insert inside, and then finally, stay tuned after the feature for the Spider-Man music video, which is Hero, from Josie Scott and Chad Kroeger.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Josie and the Kroeger Cats.
Yes. So, the first question for you guys, just as a whole, what does your history with Spider-Man look like? Even before the movie, did you have any sort of significant history with the character?
He was my favorite. Probably just when I was younger, probably just because of the costume.
Yeah.
Red was my favorite color. It still is. And it just looks awesome. And then also my grandpa collected comics as far as I know his whole life, and so that was something him and I could really relate on. And he found out I like Spider-Man, so he would give me, you know, he'd go through his old stash and like find different comic books. And when me and Mitch were there, we would go, there was a comic shop down the street, and so we'd go down there and I'd always pick a Spider-Man comic. So that was really what I was, I guess, indoctrinated into Spider-Man with, was the comics. To be completely honest, I didn't get them in order. I had no idea what I was reading.
That's fine,
like, I didn't know what was going on. I just liked the pictures. I liked how, like, I liked his costume and, you know, the villains that he fought and all that stuff. That's kind of what I knew Spider-Man as, and a little bit from the cartoon, I guess.
Yeah.
Before that movie came out.
Yeah. I knew Spider-Man like almost exclusively from the cartoon. Mm-hmm. And my brother and I had some action figures and stuff. I didn't really read a Spider-Man comic, I think, until this movie came out. I think they were like doing like dollar issues or maybe free issues or something of Ultimate Spider-Man. Because I know that they had released, they had like launched Ultimate Spider-Man from Marvel to kind of coincide with the movie to help people get into Spider-Man more. So like I got a free issue of that. And that was like the first time I was like, oh, this is really awesome. And I think that was one of my first main like actual comic books I ever got.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that because I remember that happened to us. Like you get the issue of Ultimate Spider-Man.
I feel like what it was where we saw the movie was Jamestown Mall. And like that the earlier that day, we went with our sister, and we'll kind of get more into this when we talk about kind of our history of the movie and when we viewed it.
Yeah.
But just in regards to that comic book, I think it was a free comic book day giveaway, and Turn 2, which was a comics and cards store at Jamestown Mall.
Yep.
I think probably had extras, and they were just trying to get rid of them. So we were in there with our sister because every time we were at Jamestown Mall. Oh, and the guy's
like, you guys want these or something like that?
Every time we were at Jamestown Mall, we had to make a stop at Turn 2. So when we were there with our sister, the guy handed us copies of Ultimate Spider-Man number 1.
Yeah, I think I have a very – that's exactly how I remember it too, is I went to Turn 2 and he was giving out copies or whatever. Maybe we bumped into each other before we realized who we were.
This is the first I'm hearing about your experience with that, Jeff. It's very, very similar to ours. So, I mean, we couldn't have been that far behind each other.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe Jake, we're in the same theater.
Was it beforehand or after the fact that you had watched the Spider-Man TV show from Fox Kids?
Oh, after. For sure.
What about you, Jake? Was it after or before the fact that you, because you were familiarized with Spider-Man through the comic books, but before, like before 2002, like when you were younger, because we were 10, about 10, all of us were about 10 when this came out. Matt and I were going to be 11 that summer, but all of us were about 10 when it came out. Mm-hmm. At a younger age, Jake, did you have any experience with the Spider-Man, any of the Spider-Man cartoons, like the 60s one or Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends or the Fox Kids one?
Yeah, I had a little bit. I think I watched some of the Fox Kids one. I think before that, though, I really remember the one from, what did you say, the 60s, the old one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I mainly remember that. I didn't watch a ton of it, I'll be honest. I don't really remember a whole lot before seeing the movie. I just remember a lot of like looking through the comic books and all that stuff. Not so much the show. I just know that I watched it.
In one of the comics, Spider-Man is fishing on a canoe and you're like, I hope this is in the movie.
Yeah.
With your limited experience.
That's canon, so that should be in there.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Speaking of, Spider-Man got shot out of a cannon in a deleted scene.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right.
That's how he defeated Bonesaw.
Yeah, exactly. Shot out of a cannon.
Time for my signature move.
But they had to use like the big brush to like
to push him down. Some Bonesaw's
Spider Ball.
Yeah, it's Bruce Campbell. He's like, he's asking Bruce Campbell, "Hey, can you come help me, Bruce Campbell? Can you come help me push me down in this cannon?" He's like, "What are you talking about, kid?" But it's Steven reminded me that I want to say you said like a week before the movie came out, because we watched the cartoon, the 90s cartoon.
90s cartoon.
And like a week before we saw this, my mom bought me the Dorling and Kendersley like Spider-Man.
It was very close. So it could have been a few days before.
Yeah, but I got the Spider-Man encyclopedia before that. Mm-hmm. And so taking the interest from the cartoon and then just dove headfirst into this encyclopedia, and I'm like, oh man, just falling more in love with. Hey, shut up! Just shut up! Excuse me.
Offend our guests.
Anyway, sorry. But I remember thumbing through the encyclopedia and just reading more and more about it, and just getting more and more excited. Yeah. So, this movie really kickstarted a love for Spider-Man for me. That would be just a lifelong
thing.
Because I would say beforehand, it just was superheroes as a whole, kind of our, I mean, as a whole, and it kind of showcased more so would be the X-Men and Spider-Man and Batman for us, because those also had cartoons that accompanied them.
Yeah.
But also Batman had movies, and the X-Men had the X-Men movie.
Yeah.
Spider-Man didn't have a movie, so as the interest in Spider-Man grew and the love for the cartoon grew and this encyclopedia and kind of the few things I saw on television as the movie got closer to being in theaters, the more I was like, I want a Spider-Man movie. Like, I want to see what a Spider-Man movie would look like on the big screen.
Yeah.
So with that being said,
the paparazzi footage of Tobey Maguire getting angry was
sure
got me so excited. I was like, oh, that's what we need. Spider-Man is an angry, angry boy.
Yeah.
And we need that.
That being said, though, as far as seeing the movie, did you guys do you guys remember any of the marketing? Do you remember seeing the trailer? How did you first become aware of the Spider-Man, like the movie itself?
Good question.
Honest, I don't remember.
Me neither.
I would think probably just like a commercial or something.
Yeah.
Either that or my brother, probably, because my brother has always been a big comic book guy. He probably was aware of it and mentioned it to me, because I would eat up anything superhero related, kind of like you guys were saying. If it was a superhero, I was interested at any level. So probably either from a commercial or from my brother.
Yeah.
I probably heard about it from, I mean, probably a commercial, but also like, I don't know. My parents didn't make it a big deal, but they knew that I was into like nerdy stuff. I think any kid who was like into nerdy stuff, it was kind of like a big deal, because I don't remember, was this the first of like the Marvel movies to come out, or did X-Men come out before?
X-Men came out beforehand.
Yeah, X-Men came out beforehand.
Okay. I mean, it was kind of a big deal in the sense that it was one of the first like superhero movies to come out. So I feel like if you were into that stuff, it was kind of hard to get away from it. Like, it's just like, oh shit, did you hear the Spider-Man movie's coming out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what my parents told me when I was 10.
Yeah, exactly.
Shit, did you hear? Shit.
They woke me up in the middle of the night and like, oh shit, the Spider-Man movie's coming out. Your dad's holding like an Esquire magazine. And you're like, Spider-Man's hitting the big screen, baby.
Whoa, Quilla! it's crazy that, because when you guys are like, no, I mean, I don't really remember. Mm-hmm. Were we watching the trailer, or we were watching something on YouTube?
We were watching something, and because in the past couple of days, I've watched like teaser trailers and kind of like promotional like TV bumpers and promotional videos and stuff. And I told Matt, and I was like, you know what? I don't remember the marketing for this.
Yeah, and plus you said, because when we were watching the movie, because we watched it early, we finished it up earlier, Steven mentioned, he's like, oh yeah, we never saw the trailer for it, because we rarely went to the movies, and this was pre-YouTube, where now it's like so easy to be like, oh, I'm just going to look up the trailer. Oh, there's a new trailer that came out, I'm just going to look it up.
Unless you're watching TV, I mean, I think it was as it got closer to being released is when like the E! Network had like a featurette on it. So that's when we really like became super aware of it. But I mean, they had stuff around, I'm sure of it. But I think we were at that age to where, again, it was pre-YouTube and pre-really wide availability.
Yeah.
And I didn't hardly ever get on the internet, so I didn't know where to look, or I didn't see anything.
Yeah.
So like, it's just funny that like, I have such admiration for it, and I talk about like my love for Spider-Man, but
I don't
like,
remember the build.
I don't remember the build for the movie. It's not like Star Wars Episode One, to where it was like, I'd say
everywhere.
It was everywhere as a bigger event. Yeah. There was promotional stuff that was all over the place and in your face, but like, I wish I could remember this, but
I mean, because this was like a risk. Like, it wasn't a proven commodity at that point. So I feel like, I don't know, like, I feel like there wasn't, it obviously wasn't impactful marketing for this movie.
Right. Yeah. Because at this point, too, obviously, if you're listening to this, and then you must have some awareness that superhero movies were not the draw that they are now. 20 years ago, because the last real superhero movie the Batman movies, but that went off with a whimper with Batman and Robin. And then X-Men, which was a success from Fox, but it's still like it still was kind of uncharted waters.
And we're not that far removed from Marvel almost having to declare bankruptcy. So like, I mean, I think it goes without saying that superhero movies were not what they are today, where they're the biggest genre in the whole world. Which also, it was this, Steven put it sort of as like, it was almost the Wild West. Like, because there were superhero movies, but each of them were in like different styles. Just kind of commenting on, this is this feels very specific. Like, this has a very specific style to it.
I'll only bring this up because Sam Raimi has a very distinct style of movie. I bring that up because the most recent Marvel movie, Doctor Strange 2, also directed by Sam Raimi. And I mean, for the time, I'm sure we'll dive more into this, for the time, the style, I think, worked. Because, you know, this was still relatively new. His style has not aged very well at all. So when you said this has a distinct style, it's like, yes, this absolutely has a distinct, like, 2002 superhero type feel.
It and his style works in some places, but in some places you're like, what? That's very Sam Raimi, and that doesn't fit in here. But again, like, because... I was along for whatever this movie had, like, because I was like, finally we're getting Spider-Man. And so it wasn't until I got older that I can nitpick like, oh, this, I don't like this portion of it. I don't like the approach here. The performances are kind of meh here. But it's one of those things as a kid, you don't really notice, but then as you get older, you're like, that's very Sam Raimi. We didn't really need that.
Especially since these aren't the only Spider-Man movies we've ever gotten. We've gotten, with the MCU, we've gotten three of, I mean, I don't, I'm sure you guys still have this opinion, but I mean, three of our, in our opinion, the best Spider-Man movies.
No, Amazing Spider-Man 1, Amazing Spider-Man 2, and what's the third one?
Shut
best?
Spider-Man
up.
3.
Shut up. No, you shut your mouth right now.
God. Jake, they're your favorite. What's your problem?
No. I've softened my opinion on them. Andrew Garfield's not a bad actor. Just not my favorite.
That's fair.
And I know that Jeff said that to get under my skin. And that's the only reason I reacted that way.
You see, he's doing it again. And I'm trying not to react to it.
Look at him. Look at his face. Look at his face.
Everyone. Look at his face.
Were you guys able to see this in theaters at all?
Yes. I actually have a very, impactful memory of this.
Yeah,
so,
of
like, around when this movie came out, I think a couple, maybe a week or so beforehand, my mom actually had a heart attack. So we were obviously very upset about that and like wanted to make sure she was gonna be okay, and she was. And like the day after, maybe 2 days after she got out of the hospital from that, we all, me, her, and my brother, we went to go see Spider-Man.
Nice.
So it was like a really big, like, as much as I can nitpick about this movie,
sure,
it will always have a very emotional spot in my heart because it was like my mom having a really big medical scare, and this was like the first thing we did to like kind of celebrate her coming out of the hospital.
Oh yeah,
for sure.
That's awesome. Like, nice. Almost like a mom's back kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
we're going to watch Spider-Man. That's cool. Very, very similar. Like, you, as soon as you said as much as I can nitpick, I knew it was going to a similar arena to where our theater experience was the most, like, at that time, the most grandiose, overwhelming sensory overload I had ever experienced.
I mean, I still love seeing movies in the theater, but especially as a kid, we didn't get to go to the theater very much. I'm sure you guys were the same. Like, from before, I told Matt, before we saw Spider-Man in the theater, the last movie we saw was Tarzan in 1999. Yeah. So there's the 3-year gap there.
I think I'm right there with you.
Yeah. So it was an incredible experience, But Jake, did you not see it until it came out on home video?
I think I had to wait till it came out on video, mainly because how old were we when it came out? You said 10?
We were 10. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, my parents were pretty, I wouldn't say protective, but it took me a minute to be able to watch PG-13 movies.
Yes, that's right. It is PG-13.
I think I waited till it came out on VHS, or DVD for the rich folk. Sorry. I think I had to wait till it came out on VHS to watch it. I don't really remember, though.
Your parents had to watch it first.
I saw Eight-Legged Freaks between Tarzan and this one.
Gotcha.
So, spider-related.
What I remember about Eight-Legged Freaks, besides the incomparable David Arquette,
of course,
I remember there was a TV spot for the movie, because we'd just seen Spider-Man, and as we'll kind of get into, Matt and I were beyond obsessed.
Yeah.
That any mention of Spider-Man got us excited. So there's a TV spot to where someone...
Stupid.
To where... There's a TV spot to where, like, someone's like, "What was that?" And, like, a police officer, an authority figure was like, "A Spider-Man." And we were like,
Spider-Man?
Is it Spider-Man in that?
Stupid, I know.
Yeah. So I know it swept the Academy Awards that year, but Eight-Legged Freaks is not the same as Spider-Man.
However, if you put Tarzan and Eight-Legged Freaks together, you kind of get Spider-Man.
Like, a little bit. Sort of.
The acrobatics of Tarzan, the spider of Eight-Legged Freaks.
Yeah, that's true.
Same thing.
Jake, did your parents have to screen this movie for themselves first before they let you watch it?
Yeah, pretty much all I got to see was a scene of Willem Dafoe laughing, and they thought, that's funny, that's fine, he can watch that, and then that was it.
Maybe when he gets to high school. Not right now. Sorry.
Little did they know that haunted me forever, because Defoe looked like a creep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He was so expressive in this movie, and their thought was, let's put a mask on him.
Yeah.
I remember we saw this in theaters with our sister, and that was special. We tried to go earlier that day, but I think all the screenings were sold out, so we went later in the evening. And
I want my comic book back.
that's what the guy turned to said.
But I think it came...
Hey, you didn't go see the movie. Give him back.
You said you were going to see it. Give me my comic book back, damn it.
But I remember it happened...
Give it back, Polter.
Polter.
I remember we saw the movie at an intersection of our life to where, like, it was special to see a movie, but also kind of really interest in superheroes like was at its height. Or at a pinnacle. It hasn't slowed down, but it was kind of at a spot to where seeing this, going to the theater, seeing a superhero we loved, it was the first instance I feel like that I was sad when a movie was over.
Yeah,
and
it sticks with you the next day.
I wanted to do anything to hold on to that feeling, to the feeling it made me feel seeing it. So we collected everything we could of Spider-Man. We listened to the soundtrack all the time. Like, we wanted to hold on to it as much as we could. And I feel like that was the first time that it ever happened to me. With any
pretty
form
sure
of media.
That was probably was. Mm-hmm. And every theater experience was kind of for a little bit judged on like that benchmark.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been disappointed by a movie in the theaters, ever.
Sure.
Ever.
Yeah.
Not even Rebound in middle school. That's not true.
Hey, I saw that.
But I think that's like you, Jeff. I think that's what helps give it a pass. But as far as the movie goes and screenings now, because as kids, I think it's safe to say we all loved it. We all thought it was really cool. And its subsequent sequels we liked in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
But now, what are your opinions on the movie now upon watching it as an adult? Yes. I guess, or as the years have gone by and we've gotten kind of better representations of Spider-Man.
I haven't watched it as an adult. I'll be honest with you. Wow. I haven't watched it in a while, so maybe I should have watched that in preparation for this podcast. But just watching Tobey Maguire's acting now, it kind of reminds me of what I, you know, saw back then. It's a lot different. And I also remember thinking, he doesn't look like a teenager at all.
Yeah.
like, even back then, I'm just like, that's, I don't, he's a grown-up. Like, that doesn't look like, he doesn't look like he'd be in high school. Yeah, but I haven't watched it in a while, honestly. I've seen scenes, but I haven't watched it in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I, looking back on it, like I kind of referenced, it definitely has a very distinct style. Mm-hmm. And I think at the time it worked really well. Maybe because we didn't have a whole lot to bounce off of. Like, we didn't have a whole lot of other movies to, like,
yeah,
compare it to. But, if you're comparing it to everything else that we've gotten from Marvel, and specifically the other Spider-Man movies, I would say even compared to the Amazing Spider-Man movies, like, yeah, I know I joked about them, but, like, there are a lot of things that it just didn't really get right, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of things that got good. I remember specifically as a kid kind of really being upset and having to like talk through it with my childhood self.
Yeah.
Like why his web shooters were organic.
Yeah.
Like I remember even as a kid, I was like, well, it makes sense if he was bitten by a spider that he would get like kind of webbing.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's almost like the comics maybe should have introduced that as a power, but the movie took a liberty with doing that. So like, it's kind of a lose-lose if I'm trying to rationalize it.
Yeah.
But you know, things like that, things like Tobey Maguire, I don't know. I feel like, you know, they hotshotted him from being, in high school to immediately graduating.
He's in
like
the workforce.
Being done with high school. I'm like, mm-hmm. I mean, he's Spider-Man a lot in high school.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like,
exactly.
That, we should be seeing a lot of that. But like Jake kind of said, he doesn't look like a high schooler. So if you're trying to like portray him as a high schooler, it's not going to be very convincing for very long.
Yeah.
So like, I kind of get why they would do that, but you know, like I said, there are certain things they got really well done. Other things, meh.
I think Kirsten Dunst is terrible in this movie. I'm just going to say it. I think she's awful.
Oh, but she's so beautiful. Come on, man.
But come on, man. So what stood out to me is, A, with this movie, I've pretty much resigned myself to know that it's fine. What really keeps me in is the nostalgia and that just huge theater experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The standout performances are obviously Willem Dafoe as mm-hmm. Green Goblin, J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson, and Cliff Robertson as Uncle Ben.
Yeah.
I think he was mm-hmm. a good Uncle Ben. I think the Uncle Ben stuff was good. Everything else ranges from pretty good to meh. Like, even Tobey Maguire is not really that great in this movie. Like, he doesn't have much range.
Mm-hmm.
He's always kind of pensive and not confident and shy, and he's very monotone in this movie. And I think I held on to it for so long because he was the first big screen Spider-Man, mm-hmm. But since we got things that I think were better, because mm-hmm. I even mentioned it, this Amazing Spider-Man movies may not be as good as this, but I think Andrew Garfield's a better Spider-Man than Tobey Maguire. That's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
He had the quips in there and stuff, but again, like for a first-year Spider-Man, cool. Shy, awkward, trying mm-hmm. to figure it out, but just the rest of the time, Tobey Maguire's acting was just real flat.
I would say even like his quips and him being like witty feels kind of stiff,
forced.
Yeah. Like it's written quippy, and it's written really funny, but his delivery is just like, ha. It's like it's like a robot almost. He's trying, but he's not exactly delivering.
Yeah,
I think when watching this again and really. It takes a little bit of an effort because of how much we've gotten since now. Even Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man sequels, like Spider-Man 2, I haven't seen in years, but I remember it being a better film.
Yeah,
You can say what you want about Kirsten Dunst and Tobey Maguire's chemistry and everything, and the melodrama.
She's so hot.
But because of where superhero movies were in 2002, and because kind of being unproven ground, like you said earlier, Jeff, I think as a whole, when trying to make this a self-contained story. Now, the ending, obviously, it kind of lends itself to, okay, maybe Sam Raimi's...
Maybe there's a sequel out there.
He's confident he'll get
yeah.
a sequel somewhere. But as far as like a self-contained story, I think what they're trying to do as far as an introductory tale is you hit the Spider-Man origin.
Yeah.
You use the earlier portrayals, like the him trying to get money in a wrestling match,
yeah.
which I think is... It's
not bad.
It's not.
It stays true to the source material.
It stays
yeah.
true to that, the way it was done as a... Not just as a human being, but as a wrestling fan,
yeah.
the way it was done is egregious.
Yeah.
Because you don't know how the... Obviously, they don't know how the business works. Either way, it worked in the 60s when everybody thought it was still real in a way, yeah. when it was popular, and most of the people who watched it thought it was real. Neither here nor there. Whatever. Other than that, I think, you know, you get all the familiar things that Spider-Man fans would know. You kind of serve up to maybe the uneducated on Spider-Man, kind of... how his powers come to be. So organically, you don't want to explain the web shooters. So organic webs, or you
which
see,
I still don't have an issue with that. That also comes from earlier
yeah. drafts.
Yeah.
Because this was in development hell for like 20 yeah. years before yeah. this. Because
James Cameron wanted
yeah.
organic webs.
But you
in
see,
his, yeah.
you know, when they're at the science lab and they talk about, oh, well, the spider has something called the radioactive spider has something called the spider sense, and it's able to do this, super strength and all these things,
yeah.
and then you see Peter experiencing all that. It's a nice kind of cut and paste type deal.
Here's all the exposition.
You see the yeah. familiar stuff, but there's enough there to keep a newbie's attention, and
yeah.
it's a fun action movie, kind of Sam Raimi's style makes it unique, you know, it makes it interesting and entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
The web slinging mechanics, especially with the technology at the time,
yeah,
were pretty convincing, pretty marvelous.
That was a big part of the
yeah.
that big theater.
I see
experience.
What you did there. Pretty
yeah,
marvelous.
That's what made it so memorable in theaters too. Was like
yeah.
the wide swinging
yeah.
shots, and
because
you're like. This is how they're going to do it. Because that was probably a big question.
That was a big
question. How are they going to capture
that? You bring Spider-Man into the fold and you ask, how are they going to do web swinging
mm-hmm.
and not make it look cheesy and hokey?
Yeah.
And I think it came
about...
How are
they going to make the costume not look cheesy
yeah,
and hokey?
I think,
yeah.
So I think this movie came about at a really good time when CGI isn't what it is now, which even now CGI can
yeah.
be so overdone that it looks faker than
yeah.
something from 2002. Faker than pro wrestling, but
faker than Fikey Fike.
But
Zinger.
But what they could do at the time, I really was still kind of in awe at
mm-hmm.
the camera movement when Spider-Man's
yeah.
swinging around. So,
oh, yeah.
Jake, I guess from what you can remember watching it as a kid, was that something that, as a Spider-Man fan, you were like, that's pretty awesome to see on screen?
Yeah, I remember specifically the scene where he's figuring out that he's got the web shooters and he just like fires one off and it just goes off into
yes.
the distance. I remember that scene pretty vividly, thinking, wow, that looked really, it's not cool, but like,
right.
it kind of looked realistic. It looked really
yeah.
cool. I also remember just wondering, like, how the hell are they capturing this kind of stuff? Because
yeah.
like, that was back when CGI, it wasn't like... In my opinion, anyway, it wasn't huge. Like, we were still getting stuff that looked new. It looked
no,
cool.
Yeah. It was still... it was used to supplement something, like a big project like this, but really the go-to still was practical effects.
Yeah. And, like, I remember talking about it with, you may remember, Chris Veers.
Yeah,
we were talking
I remember
about
him.
It. And he... Name drop. And he... he was saying like, oh yeah, they have an airplane above him, and he's just kind of like, you know, attaching onto it as he's going. I'm like, I don't think you're right, but okay.
I don't think that's true.
But I remember all that stuff, and just kind of like, I don't know, a lot of stuff we're mentioning is like, this was a risk. This was like,
yeah,
you know, oh, not a lot of people are going to want to go see this. I don't ever remember thinking that, but that's just because I was young and naive, and I'm
sure.
just like, yeah, Spider-Man's the shit. Like, of course they're going to make a movie
yeah.
about him. He's
yeah.
awesome. And, like, I didn't ever realize, you know, people aren't going to know exactly what this is. People aren't going to know Spider-Man's story, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, all that to say, yeah, I really liked, I liked, you know, watching it as a kid, kind of seeing what they did with it and seeing it outside of the 2D, you know, the animation and the comic book, seeing what it would look like in real life. I think especially as a kid, that was something, whenever you got to see that, like when something that was a cartoon was made real, it was a huge deal. That was really, really fun to watch. I remember that.
For sure.
I remember even when we were watching it, at Steven's apartment, there were certain scenes that mentally I go back to like the movie theater and I'm like when he's swinging to find Uncle Ben's killer, that like when he's learning how to swing while also pursuing Uncle Ben's killer, I was like, oh, I remember in the theaters, this was
and
so
the,
huge.
The way it's lit, because it's nighttime, so you can kind of hide maybe some of the ill CGI effects.
The helicopters that are swinging him around the city.
The Macy's balloon.
Yeah, exactly. But also when he takes his first pictures of Spider-Man, and it's just real brief, but when he takes out, when he saves that armored police truck, that's your first time seeing him fight in the suit, because previously we just had B-roll and
like a montage of New Yorkers talking about their opinions on him.
Yeah. Him being a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, which I think is really cool. I do like that. I think the MCU influence gets a little distracting in the other Spider-Man movies, whereas this, I'm glad it was a Spider-Man movie. Mm-hmm. So we're in New York and he's fighting, he's ground level, and the highest he gets is fighting the Green Goblin, literally. Mm-hmm. But but when you see him in the full suit kind of fighting, like that was mesmerizing. Mm-hmm. And I remember being in theaters thinking, that's Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And like, it looks like he's actually fighting those guys, and it looks like it's real life. And can I do that? Even though it's ridiculous. Yeah. It's
yes.
But still, like, just putting myself back then, it was just, I mean, use the term mesmerizing again. That's what it was. It was mesmerizing.
Mm-hmm. Kind of swept you up.
You remember, okay, you just said, can I do that? Is this the movie that started the like you get the Spider-Man glove and then you get the little web shooter thing,
little trigger,
and you get the canisters, like the toy strings?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Was that this one or the second one?
I
thought they had those with the cartoon still too, because I remember wanting one before this movie came out.
It's possible because they probably just changed up the glove
when this movie came out, because that's when it was advertised and like my cousin had one and I was just but what do you do when you run out of silly string? And it's just like, oh, your parents buy you more. I'm like, okay, yeah. I see how they do it.
I see how this goes. So this isn't real, yes?
I remember wanting one of those specifically because I thought I would be able to attach it to a tree in my backyard and swing from it.
Same. Yeah, yeah. It's like, you're like, oh, the tensile strength of the web is that of something strong, like the guy said in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Something strong, yeah. The scientist said the tensile strength is of something strong.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's keep moving.
But Jeff,
on
from...
the canister, it says directly from Dr. Connor's laboratory, so it should be movie strength, movie quality. I should be able to attach this to a plane.
I hope this doesn't make me lose my arm.
It's in the fine print.
It actually works.
You're on the roof and your parents just sit in the living room, you just hear thum, 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 thum. There's someone on the roof, you just hear
help, I'm on the roof,
it works. it works. Yeah, you don't see help, you just hear it works.
Bye mom, I'll be back before dinner.
Starts flying away. There goes that helicopter.
What are these webs hooking onto?
Helicopters.
Oh, right. Yes, yes.
But Jeff, from being a kid seeing in the theaters, of course, there's going to be kind of a different mindset. But as you got older, would you still kind of give kudos to some of these like swing mechanics and how they shot the web slinging? Would you still say that that's something that you kind of give kudos to?
Yeah, I mean, I would give kudos because it was very impressive. Like looking at it even today, like it's impressive for them to be able to pull off what they did.
Yeah.
Obviously, I mean, with anything made 20 years ago, it's not going to hold up compared to top end stuff that you see now. Like, although granted, I will say, as much as I love the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies, we don't really see him like web slinging through the city a ton.
No, not really.
But I would say like the stuff we saw in like, Homecoming, and especially the ending of No Way Home, like him kind of doing that stuff. Obviously, this movie's not going to hold up to that. So, yeah, I still would give them kudos for everything they're able to pull off in this movie.
Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure.
Yeah. And I mean, there's plenty of like practical stunts and effects too that keep you grounded in that world.
You help kind of composite the shots a little better to where it seems a little more seamless, to where like he's doing a backflip, but when he lands, it's he's physical, like he's interacting with his environment, and he's like he does that backflip with that armored car, and then he lands in a Spider-Man pose, and you can physically see you can physically see like it's Spider-Man, and I think it's kind of, they blend that pretty well.
Yeah. But speaking of, what's crazy is, I don't know if you guys knew this, and this is something that I found out, I feel like it's a piece of movie trivia that I had picked up like through the years, but one of the most memorable scenes in the lunchroom, when he's realized he's changed, he got bit by the spider, he goes to school, he's got these powers, and when Mary Jane comes and slips and he turns around, remember, he catches the lunch tray and catches all the food and stuff. Do you guys remember that?
I do.
Yeah.
That was real. That wasn't CGI.
Yeah.
Yeah, it took like 150 takes. People wonder why Tobey Maguire was so difficult to work with, probably because he's probably spent like 12 hours and 150 takes trying to catch some food on a tray.
Sam Raimi said, all of our budget is on swinging. We can't afford to CGI a damn milk carton.
Exactly. Just put some fucking Gorilla Tape on there or something. I don't know.
I'm getting so much milk on my clothes.
Shut up, boy.
Shut up, Peter.
Was that Kirsten Dunst?
Yes.
It was her stunt double.
The man in a wig.
Shut up, boy, and grab me.
Mr. Raimi, I got milk on my dress.
Shut up, boy.
I don't care. I stole that from my son's school. We're going to use every last bit of it.
All of the milk.
Yes.
But we were talking about CGI. It's cool that that was like, it looked real because it was real.
Yeah.
And also, I don't know if you guys knew this, but Willem Dafoe did 90% of his own stunts. So the commitment to the craft.
Yeah. He was.
So when he got run through with a glider, that was real?
Yeah, that was real.
When he was killed by his own glider.
But
tended to the wounds myself.
That's from Spider-Man 3, everybody.
Yes.
Bernard, who didn't do anything.
Yeah.
But with Willem Dafoe, him as Norman Osborn, as a whole, this movie, I would consider it camp. I think it's campy,
which was intentional.
It's not a bad thing.
Yeah, it makes it campy like a cartoon or kind of a comic book.
You add depth and dimension, and you can make it earnest as a whole. But at the end of the day, Sam Raimi, he's like, I'm bringing a comic book to life, so I'm going to add a little bit of campiness.
Yeah.
So part of that is
that
Willem
his approach.
Is Willem Dafoe's performance, which turned out to be a highlight.
Because there was no formula for these movies, kind of like we've been saying.
Yeah, but you go back to formula, though.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But there was no
formula.
Exactly. But I mean, there's not a whole lot I wanted to nitpick.
In the past, Jeff, you and when talking about the Green Goblin, in the past, you've kind of a bone of contention for you was the costume, the Green Goblin costume itself.
Yes. I don't understand the military background they gave to the Green Goblin costume. Like, I get for a movie it makes sense. Like, to be perfectly honest, I don't really know the origin of his costume from the comics.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how he got to that costume.
I don't
as the
remember.
Green Goblin. Maybe I gotta
Halloween.
Some reading. Oh, okay. That makes sense. They couldn't get the license for Spirit of Halloween for this.
Exactly. Big movie studio.
But
couldn't get Spirit.
I didn't understand, like, the need to make it military, to make it, like, a not a power suit, but like a tactile battle suit thing. Like, I really liked, I know this is, you know, we have the luxury of 20 years for it, but I like how No Way Home handled the Green Goblin costume. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
For like the biggest movie that came out in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, how Willem Dafoe's Green Goblin in this, he has the suit.
Yeah.
The same suit, but it's like kind of battle damaged a little bit. And like he takes like a blue hoodie, essentially, I think. And like it gets tattered and stuff.
Yeah.
It looks so much more like the comic.
Yeah.
I don't understand why, if you want to go a military route with this movie, you could have made it look more a little bit more comic book accurate by saying, oh, Norman took a prototype that was used in the field or something, like field tested, and it's damaged, and, you know, he decorates it a little bit because he's psychotic. Like, I didn't like that. And I've seen some behind the scenes things. I know, Matt, you kind of said how it was silly to have such an emotive person under a mask.
Yeah.
They actually at one point had like this kind of animatronic mask that they put on top of Willem Dafoe, and it looks kind of skin tight, but it was animatronic completely, and it was expressive and stuff, but apparently it was so heavy to wear. Cause like it moved the cheeks and the mouth.
It was cool.
The eyes had like yellow lenses over them, which I thought was kind of goofy looking. But at the end of the day, I kind of want to just say, why don't we just say his skin turns green when he's the goblin?
Some sort of poison.
Just do makeup to make his face green so we can still have Willem Dafoe's face.
Yeah.
Cause Willem Dafoe is a great actor and an attractive man, but he can make his face look like the frickin' goblin's face.
He
wanted to. He's proven it.
Even make it like make it look kind of like medical, or he's getting some sort of disease or something, and they can point it out throughout the movie, like, Dad, are you okay? Which James Franco's terrible in this movie too. Again, bad performance. But
to be fair, he came off the sets of Freaks and Geeks, so he was probably stoned out of his mind.
Yeah, that's probably.
He sounds like it.
Yeah. It's not bad enough to where it distracts me. But yes, if they could have at least done something to give Willem Dafoe his face, let him have that, because that's another reason that No Way Home works, is because he doesn't have anything on his, like, he has a little shawl. Like an old lady, like Aunt May in this movie, and but other than that, like they're letting him play and use his expressions and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but again, if they're doing the whole military costume approach, then yeah. But essentially, Jeff, what you're saying is they should have changed that approach up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know it's tough. Because it's the same thing with X-Men they're like, they even kind of poke fun of it in X-Men. You going from comic book page to screen, you know, certain colors and just colors, colorful costumes themselves won't really, at least at that time, don't really translate. So maybe they were like, well, it looked kind of silly if he had green makeup or something, or even if he had like some sort of venom that he injects himself with that distorts his face and turns him green, and that's what's kind of, you know, messing with him internally. And really, like, because there are those moments where Willem Dafoe plays really like torn, and he plays like conflicted really well. So maybe you could have that to where, like, because there are these at Oscorp, what it is like the suit works as like an enhancement, so it's like a it's almost like its own steroid. Like, I think they mentioned that a couple times, that it's like an enhancement suit that is going to help the military in a way. So that's what kind of gives them this super strength,
like the Power Rangers.
Yeah, exactly. It looks like a giant Power Rangers suit.
Yeah.
But they could have like had this venom he injects himself with that Oscorp is trying out, and eventually, you know, his rational moral side can, you know, starts to fade away, and then that's the third act of the movie is really when the venom takes over.
Yeah.
But surprisingly, it's a
the movie's shorter than I remember. I mean, two hours is longer than a regular movie. But yeah, unlike what we get with MCU movies, which are all getting up there in the 2.5 hour mark, like,
yeah,
the movie was kind of rushed in a way. But again, if they wanted to make it self-contained, like you mentioned, Jeff, they kind of hot shot everybody from high school,
yeah,
to being in college, to kind of hit those points that adult Peter had to deal with, and then the relationships in that, and kind of dropping these references to Dr. Connors and getting the Daily Bugle, yeah, in there.
Like, because like they're talking about the photos of Spider-Man aren't good, mm-hmm, and they're like, well, Eddie... They're talking about Eddie Brock, yeah, like Eddie for like whatever. Yeah. Eddie can't take pictures. I can't remember, yeah, and I just watched it.
Yeah.
Jake, do you remember?
Not at all. Not at all.
But going back to like the, you know, it's just maybe at that time Sam Raimi was like, well, how are we going to translate this from page to screen? So maybe there's, but it's just, it doesn't make sense also because I know what I'll do. I'll put a bright green armored suit, yeah, on there with a strange helmet. But I mean, as a kid, I didn't really think about it because it was kind of sinister.
Yeah.
But now, like, you know, it's kind of goofy looking.
Speaking of page to screen, I will say, and I really didn't have a lot to nitpick. I was kind of aggressive with saying certain performances weren't good.
Mm-hmm.
I love this movie. And one thing I think, like at some points, it's too melodramatic. I feel like I'm watching a soap opera, yeah, not a comic book movie.
And Peter and Mary Jane don't have very good chemistry.
That's the thing. Separate, they're okay, but when they should have chemistry and react and like interact really well, it just feels very flat and stiff and, mm-hmm, kind of forced. Like they're trying to force a relationship there. And I don't buy it. I ain't buying it. But I think something Sam Raimi did do well, and he kind of zeroed in on it and made it more of a focus in Spider-Man 2, is the conflict that Peter feels as Spider-Man, really zoning in on that with great power comes great responsibility. Mm-hmm. He realizes fast the kind of the responsibility he has to accept for his actions or, mm-hmm, the things he puts people through. And I think though it comes off kind of soap opera-y at a time, at least Sam Raimi's like, he's a fan and he knows, oh, it's not just wall crawling, web slinging, throwing around quips. Like, he has this internal struggle that is very real, mm-hmm, and makes it very difficult for him to hold down jobs, to hold down relationships, mm-hmm, stuff like that. So I'll give it its due in that he really did make that a central focus, like the with great power comes great responsibility. And I think Cliff Robertson does a great job of delivering that and showing us Uncle Ben, and when he enough to where me, like when he dies and he says, he sees him and he's like, Peter, and he says like, oh, Peter, and then he I mean, it's when you're not seeing it, just, oh, Peter, oh, Peter, I want to see your Peter kind of thing. But it's like, he's like, oh, Peter.
But he's
again,
like,
I'm not just, oh, Peter.
But in that moment,
someone call cops.
Even though he's swarmed by people and police officers.
Yeah, but this struggle that he has when he says, Peter, like, it was rough.
He's like,
yeah,
he's like crying when he says,
yeah,
it, essentially.
Yeah. So I appreciate the humor and the camp, and it takes away from certain things, and some of the performances kind of take away. But I do appreciate Sam Raimi, like, no, this is who Spider-Man is. That's what I'm going to focus on. I think that's great, and I, mm-hmm, really like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I think the newer ones, I mean, I think that they're great. The Tom Holland Spider-Mans are great. But, you know, again, spoiler alert for a huge movie that was No Way Home. They kind of shoehorned that in there, the whole with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
That wasn't very impactful, yeah, at all in this last one. And so I think, you know, with what you're saying, that was a much bigger deal and it hit home a lot harder,
yeah,
in the originals. Or in, you know, the Tobey Maguire ones, the Sam Raimi ones. I think that was much more of a focal point, which kind of lends itself more to Spider-Man not being Tony Stark's protege. These movies were a lot more Spider-Man than they were, you know. Oh, because, like, not to get off on a tangent, when Spider-Man was introduced in the MCU, he was an Avenger, basically.
Yeah.
Like, that's all we've seen him as. And so these movies kind of give you an idea of what Spider-Man is like. Like you're saying, standalone. He, you know, we get references to little things here and there, but like, this is his world. He's not just part of something bigger. This is his thing. So I respect these movies for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Introducing, you know, putting Spider-Man in situations where he's dealing with his own rogues gallery and not the MCU rogues gallery or the Avengers rogues gallery or Infinity War or Endgame or any of those things. As much as I like that those stories are told, but as a Spider-Man fan, you want that kind of, I love Aunt May in the MCU Spider-Man. I love that
Marissa Tomei, baby.
But I love kind of the different way that they're doing Aunt May. I love that, you know, she's a part of, you know, the secret and blah, blah, blah. I like how they've done that, but like, I do want the standalone Spider-Man stuff. I do kind of want that Uncle Ben presence in a way, even if it is Aunt May in this one earlier, saying with great power comes great responsibility. Like once she knows, like Peter, instead of like having, you know, a rat-tat-tat about him remembering his suit before he goes to Europe and Spider-Man No Way Home or in Spider-Man Far From Home.
Yeah.
Maybe have her like have an earnest moment to where she's like, Peter, you're special, and you know, and you know, with great power comes great responsibility. I heard somebody say once, or she's like, you know, my father used to say, and blah, blah, because
I don't think that those words are even said in the MCU, are they?
They're said, aren't they said? I haven't seen Far From Home since the theater, but does she, Jake? You said that idea was kind of shoehorned in there. Was that said by Aunt May before? Spoiler alert: before May dies. In Far From Home, did she say that?
Yes, she did. Yep.
Okay.
I don't remember that. That's okay. Yeah, maybe she does. Maybe I'm remembering those wrong too, because that's the first time I ever remember her saying that. Because when I heard it in theaters, I'm like, oh bullshit! Like we don't need to wedge that in there
now. That's the crux and the center point of Spider-Man and his ideals and his morality is this Uncle Ben. So when Cliff Robertson, it's not just the fact that Uncle Ben has a presence in this; it's the fact that Cliff Robertson is an endearing Uncle Ben. He's the father. He's definitely the father figure. And and it's more than just when Peter lashes out at him before he drops him off at the library so Peter can sneak away to the wrestling match. You feel bad for him when Peter lashes out at him. I got emotional watching it again when Peter sees Uncle Ben there. Uncle Ben just opens his eyes for the last time and says, Peter, and he's about to cry.
I give you my Sum 41 tape. Because they're listening to the Sum 41 song from the soundtrack when he turns down the radio. We're like, that song? Really? Uncle Ben's listening to that song?
But I love that Uncle Ben said the iconic, with great power comes great responsibility, and it's harkened back to as the trilogy goes on. So as much as, you know, I think, like we've said, the MCU have the best representation and they're our favorite Spider-Man movies, there's still a lot that these Raimi ones did well that maybe the MCU could have done itself.
Yeah, because there's still the humor.
Humor was still there. Yeah. I mean,
it was just campy because, again, there was no formula.
I think the Spidey quips were fine because that's all we had at the time. People familiar with Spider-Man knew he was quippy, thwippy and quippy.
Yeah, it just suffers from Tobey Maguire not being able to deliver them very well.
Yeah. Now, J. Jonah Jameson, think J.K. Simmons, his portrayal.
That's hand in hand. That's straight from the comic books. Mm-hmm. And he is
J. Jonah Jameson, for sure.
There is no issue letting him transcend across Marvel universes. Because, like, how do you recast that? Now, granted, people could say that for Hugh Jackman, but I'm like, there are better people that could be Wolverine. I don't think there's anyone else that could be J. Jonah Jameson. I mean, realistically, yes, but like J.K. Simmons left such a mark on there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can watch him in the MCU and be like, I'm cool with this. It's like, at that point, like when he shows up at the end of Far From Home, everyone's just like, oh, sweet, awesome. They're not like, but this isn't the same universe, because it doesn't matter. Like, he is J. Jonah Jameson.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. He transcends universe.
Yeah, exactly. Space and time. He transcends space and time.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as outside of the movie media goes, you guys are gamers. So did you play the first Spider-Man video game for PlayStation 2 at all?
I did, and it sucked.
Oh, right. Tell me
it
more.
It was not good.
Interesting.
The first one
is... I just remember
is,
the second game.
The second one's a masterpiece.
Yeah.
The first one is very crappy because it is... There's not really much web swinging in it. Like, you are, like, on a rooftop and you have to beat up some thugs. And then you have to... You web swing over to another building rooftop. But I remember even as a kid, I'm like, my webs aren't connecting to anything. He's just shooting into the air and, like, swinging off of, like, nothingness.
Yeah.
And, like, there's one scene or one level where you chase the vulture in the game. And you're literally, like, going around a very crappy New York City. And your webs aren't hitting anything. They're not connecting with anything but the sky. So
yeah.
I remember even as a kid, I was like, this is not a well-made game.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the second one, masterpiece. That's what I've because heard. It actually had an actual New York City, and your webs had to hit buildings for you to swing. And it was awesome.
Yeah, nice. For sure.
Yeah, that's the one I remember. I don't remember much of the first game. Probably because it was terrible.
Ah,
it was not good.
I tell you what was good was the soundtrack.
Oh,
now
yeah.
When I mentioned the soundtrack earlier, Jeff, you got a wide-eyed look on your face because was that something you owned, and that was something I'm sure you listened to a lot.
I think it was like my first CD that I bought with my own money. Was the soundtrack for Spider-Man.
Yeah,
it's classic. Like, there are songs, I mean, obviously, say what you want about Nickelback. That song, Hero, about Nickelback and Saliva, but that mm-hmm. song, Hero, with both those guys from both those bands, that's, like, it's just probably because of what the theater experience was. But in terms of, like, movie connection, like, we were watching the music video, and I was like, this teamed with these scenes from the movie has, like, an epic intensity to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels very large, and it feels like we need a hero to save us. And mm-hmm. like, here's what you're getting into if you go see this movie.
Yeah.
And then there's like songs like Sum 41.
Yeah.
Alien Ant Farm's great on there. Invisible Man by Theory of a Dead Man was great.
There's some songs that it's music in and inspired by Spider-Man. So like Bother by Corey Taylor is not in the movie at all.
There's a band called Green Wheel on there that had a song called Shelter, and the lead singer of Green Wheel used to work with our older brother Andrew, who's been on the show. They worked together at their teaching jobs. So he used to work in St. Louis. And so that's a pretty cool connection. Anyway, go ahead.
But also Danny Elfman's score, and then Aerosmith's version of the Spider-Man theme. Jake, did you have the soundtrack at all?
No, I was too busy listening to DC Talk. I liked that song Hero a lot. Other than that, I'm sure I knew a lot of the songs.
Oh, like, yeah.
You know, just from school, but I didn't ever have the soundtrack. I remember loving the song Hero, though. I really wanted that song, that is where I learned to love Nickelback.
Oh, well, okay. All right. Yeah, I remember you had a mural. You had their mural in your basement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you had.
Yeah, yeah.
Painted it yourself.
It's the Last Supper, and Chad Kroeger is Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of Jesus, the classic scene where Green Goblin explodes into Aunt May's room while she's doing the Lord's Prayer.
Oh,
hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Makes it a Christian movie. It's got a Christian message.
We've lampooned that over the years, but really, Stephen pointed it out, you're like, this is actually pretty intense.
It's genuinely kind
scary.
Of an intense... Because, I mean, as silly as he looks, Green Goblin, like, he's he's pretty intense. Like, yeah. Especially in that final fight scene.
That's where Sam Raimi's horror background was actually really useful, was setting up the intensity of at least the first part of that final fight before mm-hmm. music actually does kick in, because it's no music. It looks very gothic, and like Spider-Man's getting his ass kicked and mm-hmm. the blood, and like Peter looks hurt. And I remember, and even now watching it, it's like, dude, as a 10-year-old, you're like, I don't know if, I mean, he's going to survive it because it's a Spider-Man movie, but it's like, he's in trouble. And, like, Green Goblin is, the intensity is turned up to 11 there. Mm-hmm. So I do think that's where Sam Raimi's horror background played a pretty big role in setting up the intensity of that scene. Yeah.
But I remember with the Aunt May scene where Green Goblin bursts through a window, that's frightening, and it's genuine. It's creepy, and it's heavy.
Because he's like, finish it.
Yeah. But like, because yeah. as I mean, again, like Matt said, we've lampooned it a lot over the
yeah.
years. But I mean,
yeah, baby.
That's a moment that I remember our sister genuinely like crying during, because like it just was so frightening, because this beloved character was
yeah.
in a horrifying position, and it just there it as much as we joke about it, there is some weight to mm-hmm. that scene.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I there was definitely some horror stuff in there. Now that I'm remembering it, because I think you guys brought it up earlier. I didn't remember the scene. Now I remember it genuinely shocking me to my core when, I guess what, Peter was in a burning building and he's
yeah.
like, I'm gonna save you guys.
Yeah.
And there's like an old lady, and then it turns around and it's the Green Goblin still
yeah.
in full costume.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember that scaring me so bad.
Yeah, exactly. And
but then
I mean,
like,
this
he gets run through at the end, and I still remember, like, you know, don't tell Harry. And then he like
yeah.
leans over and just falls like onto the glider, and then blood just like runs out of his mouth. It's like, oh,
that's
my god, that's really gruesome
to
for a superhero
yeah.
movie, like, you know, back then anyway.
Yeah. I will say it kind of took away from the gravity of it when he's like, Godspeed, Spider-Man. Not that, but when Spider-Man does the backflip and the glider comes towards him and he's like, oh, and then it hits him.
Yeah.
Like, kind of. Yeah. Like, that's meant mm-hmm. to be. It's, I don't know if it was meant to be like a realization, like, oh, shit, he can do that. But just the, oh, and the, like, anything that would potentially arouse laughter,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, this isn't really the place to do that
yeah.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But kind of pulling into the station here, something for me. So, I mean, I think we hit on a lot of things, kind of had a mix of kind of things we kind of can pick at.
Yeah.
But as a whole, this movie still puts me in a place.
I still love it.
It
yeah.
puts me in a place being that 10-year-old in the theater who, mm-hmm. as soon as he saw the things that he knew being referenced, and is like, oh, and finally it's sinking in that, oh my God, there's Peter Parker, there's Spider-Man, there's MJ, there's the spider.
Yeah.
Peter got bitten. What's going to happen? And just being along for the ride and
there's
being swept
teacher.
Away and just being so taken in by that
yeah.
movie that just, that's why in No Way Home, when Tobey Maguire shows up.
Yes.
And he plays the role he did, I got so emotional.
Yeah.
Because every time it had been years since I watched it. And when we were watching it, I just had that same feeling. And it just, there's a feeling I get when watching it that takes me back to being 10 and after it was done and the credits were rolling and after he tells Mary Jane, like, he has to deny
mm-hmm.
her, you know, her love for him, and they just be friends. And I remember being upset because I was like, this is what you wanted. And like
yeah.
our sister being like, I'm sure there'll be a sequel. And I'm like, but I need resolution now.
Yeah, exactly. I'm still kind of like that.
Yeah. And when James Franco's like, Spider-Man will pay and all that at the end, right before he goes to Uncle Ben's grave, just all these feelings come up, but it's still just, it just takes me back to
yeah.
a spot that
yeah.
makes it so special.
Yeah.
And Jeff, considering the conditions that you saw it under, I'm sure, like we said earlier, the things we can kind of laugh at now, it still kind of resonates with you in that way, I would assume.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, this movie, for as much camp and stuff it had, it definitely did have those emotionally impactful moments. And that ending, that ending was definitely one of the things that, even as a kid, like you were saying, still I walked away with. And I was like, I want to see a sequel. I need to see a sequel.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly. For sure. And that's easy now to kind of nitpick things. But like, obviously we're all putting ourselves back at the first time you saw it. We didn't have anything like this before. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I was all aboard for everything. Mm-hmm. And like I said, of course, with the power of hindsight, with the power of hindsight, baby, with the power of hindsight, you can take what we do have now and you have the power to kind of pick and choose. But back then, like, no, I wasn't like, his acting's a little flat, or like their chemistry is not for. I'm like, we're seeing Spider-Man. This is on the screen right now, and they're taking it seriously. It's not, I mean, obviously it is campy, but it's like, as a 10-year-old kid, you're like, this is exactly what I wanted, kind of thing. So
yeah,
that's always going to make me love this movie. Mm-hmm. Always.
Yeah.
It's just, it means so much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't really go back right now and say, I mean, like, yeah, obviously, like you're saying, you can say, oh, it's campy, the acting wasn't, you know, great or whatever. But it's like parents watching cartoons with their kids. They're like, God, this is insufferable. But
exactly,
when you were a kid, like watching, you know, SpongeBob when we were kids, like, that was the best. It was so good. That's exactly what we wanted, exactly what we liked. And then, you know, we grow up and, you know, I'm watching Cocomelon with my niece and I'm like, Jesus, if I hear row, row, row your boat one more time, I'm going to jump out of the window. Like, it's, you can look back on anything and say, I liked this, but it's like, you were a kid. Of course you liked it. Like, this was everything you wanted. This was Spider-Man in real life. Tobey Maguire was Spider-Man. Like, that's all you needed. That's all you needed.
Yeah. Yep. And even though we've been spoiled with, take your pick, whatever Spider-Man movie you want, you know, this was it until the second one came out. And sure, like, Marvel properties were used for like the Hulk, and then later on after Spider-Man 2, Fantastic Four, and all these things, you know, and Daredevil. With it being the Wild West, it kind of, it's not like you'd get consistency like with the MCU. So with this being so enjoyable and this be people, I'm sure a lot of it was also people being relieved that, again, this was a movie that was in development hell for 2 decades up to that point. Uh-huh. And hey, Tobey Maguire, like, again, we can think what we think now, but Tobey Maguire, hey, he exceeded expectation.
Him working out for that role and the things he did set the tone for what other people would do for superhero movies. Like, Christopher Reeve worked out for Superman, but not to that extent, I feel like.
But it was something from page to screen. I think the box office shows expectations were exceeded. It was highly enjoyable.
Yeah.
It birthed 2 other sequels. It gave hope for superhero movies. And there were ebbs and flows in between. But I mean, Spider-Man, even for what it is today, you can just, especially if you were at that age we were when we saw it, you can still see how special it was.
Yeah.
And also it was the first one of the Marvel movies to use the Marvel comic book page flip open, which really,
I remember that distinctly, like, whoa.
Yeah.
And remember, in the theaters.
Because we never saw X-Men in the theaters and it didn't have that at the opening of X-Men. But this was the first superhero movie. It was also the first superhero movie we saw in the theaters.
Yeah.
So that was special as well. But, I mean, you can say what you want about Tobey Maguire now and about all that stuff. And I think I love what he did in No Way Home. So I think him and Andrew Garfield have gotten some redemption.
Yeah.
The first Spider-Man is just so special in so many ways.
I will say before we wrap up,
because
I think that's what you're doing right here.
Yeah, getting there.
So Frankie Muniz was one of the options they were kind of entertaining, and he was actually a kid at the time, so I would have been interested to see that. When I found that out, the only image I got in my head was him leaning over Uncle Ben's dead body
in a garbage bin.
But when he's leaning over Uncle Ben, he's just sitting there and everyone, the commotion's going on around him after he dies. He just looks up at the camera, it zooms in. You just hear a distant voice say, "Life is unfair." It's the Malcolm in the Middle theme. Yeah.
He's staring down at him dying on the sidewalk. "You're not the boss of me now."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or he's like, "With great power comes great responsibility. You're not the boss of me now." And then he just leaves. Yeah.
"And you're not so big."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. That's all I have.
Yeah. And we covered a lot, but like with things like this of some sort of cultural significance, there's so much more to say. It definitely was significant in our lives, whether we haven't seen it since we were kids or watched it recently. It had some sort of impact. It had some sort of effect.
Definitely.
And just like Spider-Man, doing podcasts have had a major impact on us.
Oh, yeah.
And
Creative outlet.
And we couldn't have gotten started without you guys and Zach. So this has been special to have you guys on.
Yes.
And then the many more times we're going to have you on this show and what you've done with us on this show. I mean, you guys, we couldn't have asked for better collaborators.
Oh, yeah.
So it's been so special to have you guys on to help us celebrate. So, Jake and Jeff, thank you for being on the
show.
Yes,
thank you.
Of course. Thank you for having us. It's been a lot of fun. It really has been a fun creative outlet, and I've always had fun doing this. So thanks for having us on.
Yeah, for sure. Next time we'll get to figure out this whole audio situation.
Yeah, I don't know why it was different this time around, because that's how we used to always do it for 2 years, and for I don't know what
we'll
happened.
Figure it out.
I just updated my Mac, so I don't know. We'll mess around with it.
Yeah,
but. Thank you all for sticking with us. Everybody out there, no matter what show you've jumped on with, thank you all for supporting us through 200 episodes and much, much more, because we're also getting closer to our 100th episode of the Radcast.
Yeah.
So thank you all for doing that, Jake and Jeff. Your contributions to not only this creative outlet, but to our lives is invaluable.
Yes.
So thank you both so much for being on and talking with us. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, baby. So until the next time,
be good to yourselves, be good to each other, because why would you want to be rude when you could be rad? We'll see you next time. And they say that a hero can save us. I'm not going to stand here and wait. I'll hold on to the wings of the eagles. Watch as we all watching us watch as we all fly away. Whoa. This concludes our broadcast day.